The illogic of life. Not the sick logic, just the illogic of life. For a number of months, I've done a couple of sermons about just how weird and wonderful life, the universe, existence are, and just how unspeakably blessed we are just to exist, just to live, just to be able to think and wonder and be together and ask questions and answer questions. And that's that weirdness of existence. I look at existence and I am reliably informed that we're all quivering strings. And I can go with that. But it also makes me understand that I really don't understand very much. And when I look out there into the edges of the universe, or when I look deep inside at life, I'm just filled with wonder. It is, we are, and I don't understand why. Doesn't mean I'm giving up. We're not giving up on science here. But it is all so unspeakably wonderful and improbable, and the throwing of the dice of chance, where I think Einstein was wrong, God, such as you may understand or not, does play dice with the universe. And we got here, and it got here, and it's pretty wonderful. And I don't understand it, but I'm engaged with it. I'm going to try to appreciate all of this while I'm here, while we're here together. Today I want to talk about the illogical, not on the massive scale out there, and not on the micro string scale, but on the personal scale. And the illogic of how many of us, but I'll just talk about me for the moment, how many of us lead lives of deep illogic and sometimes cognitive dissonance. And incidentally, I'll cut to the end, and that's okay. It's when we get certain about the stuff that we don't understand that we get into big trouble. I was reminded of this, kind of cognitive dissonance, of the times when my values, my thoughts, my philosophy, my science gets out of line with my impulses and my real feelings. Happened only this week. I was writing an op-ed piece for the Daily News on the death penalty. Now, my values are against the death penalty. I don't believe in taking another human life. I don't think that it's useful financially. I don't think that it makes any sense. There's so much injustice in our justice system, and that we can't be trusted to use the death penalty. And there are lots of reasons why I'm against it. Except I'm also aware that I have deep violent impulses, and I could easily facilitate somebody's journey to hell if they have murdered, if they have hurt somebody close to me, if they have committed arson, vandalism, scammed old people, vulnerable people, sick people. I have impulses that are really out of line with my values. And I don't want to reconcile them. I want to only recognize them and make peace with the truths of acting civilized and trying to act according to my values, when sometimes the actions are in contradistinction to my impulses. I don't want to go with the impulses. And these kinds of pieces of cognitive dissonance, these tensions between values and actions and impulses, happen in many areas of most of our lives. They certainly happen to me in terms of politics, when I don't, for example, believe. Let me make it positive. I really want to vote for the candidate that I prefer. I want to vote for and not against. But often I'm faced with the voting for the worser of two lessers, or the lesser of two worsers. And I don't like that. I should be able to vote for the person who is closest to my values, but when I examine that, I see that a vote for that person will get me the worser of all the worsers because it's a wasted vote. These are pieces of reason that are in tension with what my beliefs and my values are, and I haven't found a perfect way or even a good way of accommodating it. I want to believe in the worth and dignity of all human beings. It's our first principle as Unitarian Universalists. But there are some people whose worth and dignity just really elude me. And it's not an accident that this paragraph follows the one on politics. But I'm okay because when I look at someone, I can see their humanity. When they make me completely crazy and I want to strangle them, most of the time either going through the television to strangle them, or the guy that cut me off in the Corvette at 120 miles an hour this morning on the way to church, I was very glad I wasn't packing heat because my impulses were certainly not Buddha-like. That all that epinephrine and testosterone started flowing, and I was thinking some pretty evil thoughts, but not acting on them. I didn't stomp on the accelerator and try to catch up with them, because, of course, in a Honda and a Corvette, that would have been pretty silly, too. So I've got to try to live with these kinds of disparate parts. And the idea of the inherent worth and dignity of every human being is something in which I believe and something to which I aspire. But I am very clear that I am not a fully realized person because it is still aspirational. There are people for whom it is very difficult for me to see the inherent worth. And I'm not talking about minor social stuff. I'm talking about the monsters of the world. I'm not talking about, you know, your Uncle Charlie who's just a little difficult at the holiday party and that you really don't want to be in the same room with. I'm really talking about how difficult it is sometimes to look into the eyes of others and to get past experience to whatever their issues or hurts or brokenness may be. Because most of the time when I am able to step back from an encounter that has that epinephrine roaring through my system, I'm able to ask the question, what is broken in me and what is broken in them that there is this bond of rage or animosity? This isn't a question that necessarily has an answer. But in asking it, we're part of a process that has at least the possibilities of self-knowledge and maybe even healing and reconciliation, although that's not always possible. Aspirationally, as Unitarian Universalists, we look to find those bonds of humanity and understand that just the fact of being here as a human being on this planet, we owe each other a kind of social contract of decency, of courtesy, of acceptance, and it's hard, and it's aspirational, and we're not perfect at it. Other things we're not perfect about is reconciling what we know with what we do in lots of areas. I think most of us understand rationally that diet and exercise are good for us, and that calories actually do count, and that putting those wants and desires not to exercise and wanting to eat isn't necessarily the best thing in the world to do. We know this with our heads. There are no secrets out there. And yet, as I sit contemplating in the middle of the night, I hear the call of the wild Häagen-Dazs from deep inside the freezer. And if not that, there is from 2 miles away, I can hear the siren song of the sirloin saying, "Come get me, come get me." And I know better, but I don't always act better. My knowledge, my values, my wanting to stay here on this planet, these are big deals. And yet, I and some others in the universe may not make the greatest decisions when we try to reconcile our impulses and our values and what we deeply know. Another place that's common for everyone, particularly in the holiday season with family. I very seldom, the chronic members of this congregation know, say anything that is just kind of a fiat. But let me say one. No one ever wins an argument in a family. You may silence the opposition. You may drive it underground. You are feeding and nurturing passive aggressiveness that is a karma that will come back to bite you if you think you have won at the time when you least want to be bitten by karma, when you really need a favor. You can silence opposition, you can threaten opposition, you can do all kinds of things, but you never really win an argument. I have never won an argument about religion. I believe. No, you don't. You should believe, but I can't. Where are you going to go with this stuff? And yet people argue about religion all of the time. My God can beat up your God. My God is more forgiving than your God, and if you don't believe that, my forgiving God will burn you. More cognitive dissonance. We get into these religious ideas, and it's coming up, of course, in an election season where we're hearing that Mormons are a cult. Understand this. Religion is cult plus time. We just get used to our stuff, but our stuff is as irrational as anybody else's stuff. I was at a meeting of professors at the Graduate Theological Union, and one of them was dissing on Islam by saying, "Well, who could really believe that God would speak to an ignorant camel jockey? Because God is much too busy talking to shepherds and goat herds and carpenters. That makes complete sense. And God is much too busy with the divine clicker managing the baseball games and the football games and the boxing matches and not taking care of the world and cancer and war and all those other things." None of this bothered these other professors because, I don't know, I guess they never thought about it. My faith is as irrational as anybody else's. I'll see my irrationality against yours anytime. But it's mine. It's not better or worse than the other person's. It's examined, and it's mine. I believe in humanity. I believe that we can learn. I believe that we can someday beat our swords into plowshares, our spears into pruning hooks, and study war no more. Where is my evidence? What is the scientific basis, the empirical basis for my belief? It is, again, irrational, aspirational, rationally aspirational, because it's an examined value and a hope. And it is what the theologian Jacques Ellul said, it's self-involving in the good sense. There are three kinds of prayers that Ellul talked about. One is the petitionary prayer. "Lord, won't you send me a Mercedes-Benz?" sent me a Corvette today and almost killed me. Got to be more specific. Send me the pink slip to the Mercedes-Benz. The petitionary prayers I don't believe in, but I do them all the time. And usually not asking for a car, but asking for health, asking if I have a sick child or baby or grandchild. I do it all the time, but I don't believe in it. But it doesn't bother me that I do it and I don't believe in it. It doesn't feel hypocritical. It feels human to wish, to hope, to invoke something when we feel the tininess of ourselves on the scale of infinity. Alul talked about another kind of prayer that is beside the petitionary prayer, the self-involving. It's not the Lord send peace, but make me an instrument of your peace. Let me help. Give me the energy, the will, the desire to build the world that I aspire to. So that when I say, I believe in humanity, I believe that we can teach each other, that we can learn from each other, I am explicitly saying, and I will be involved in that process. I may not believe in the prayer, but I believe in the process that clarifies thinking and leads to some kind of action. There are a friend of mine from the Studio City congregation says that he wants as his epitaph on his tombstone, I don't understand. I think that those are great words. I think that admitting when we don't understand, admitting that we don't understand the far and the near and all of our actions doesn't mean that we resign from trying to understand. It doesn't mean that we resign from being involved. It doesn't mean that we resign from honoring the process of examining our lives and our values, reconciling those that we can, and understanding that we are complex human beings. We are called rational animals. I have often said that we're really only rational in short spurts and it's exhausting and we fall into the chaos, but I think more accurately we are rationalizing animals and that we can make almost anything fit our system. But that's not our job. It isn't our job to reconcile, to rationalize in that sense. It's our job to examine, to look at those various facets of our life, to understand that when we are judging other people's politics or their religion, to be aware of the logs in our own eyes, and that for me personally to understand that belief in Zeus or Thor and thunderbolts or Moroni giving tablets in America is neither creative nor destructive except as to how we use the stories. If we use the stories to connect, to build, to heal, I don't care what system of poetry, of music, people adhere to. It is by our fruits that we are known. It is by not simply our aspirations or our poetry or our hymns, but how we attempt to lead our lives, examined lives of examined values, not perfectly in line with our impulses, but in a movement towards civilizing ourselves. Socrates was esteemed to be the wisest man in Athens because he said, the only thing that I know is that I don't know anything. I aspire to that, not in a competitive sense, but I aspire to not knowing, but searching, trying, building philosophical and moral houses of cards and being willing to have them blown down by facts and by reason and then welcoming the challenge of taking those cards, taking those facts, and rebuilding it into something that will serve meaning and life and each other better. Not to know is not to be rendered actionless or passionless. It is to proceed with a certain amount of the most difficult of the virtues, humility, in engaging a world with passion and humility. And how do you reconcile passion and humility? I really don't know. It's an ongoing project, as is our lives together.